Alan Kring Productions in association with Emergent Light Studio presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 5 for Autumn Semester 2019. Lecture 27, delivered on December 3rd.
Today, review for the final exam, part one. A little quick one last look at the market, which will help launch us into a discussion of the material for the final exam. As you can see, we had a broad-based decline in the market, in the equities markets today. So what would you call that kind of a market? What kind of day was it? A bad day? There's another word for a down day. Bear! I thought you said that at first. It was a bad day, yeah. But a bad day for a bear is a good day because bears profit on down days by short selling. So notice that I'm already giving you some ideas. Today I'm going to go through general larger swaths of the final exam, and then on Thursday some very specific examples. Just to get you started, though, I'll ask questions about markets, bears and bulls. You can see that this was a day when the White House announced, first of all, that there probably wouldn't be a trade deal until after, the president said, until after he's reelected with China, which set the markets down. And then an announcement, 100% increase in tariffs on French wines, cheese, and handbags, which sent the market down a little bit. We don't do a lot of things with France, but it was an indication that there is no cooling off of this threatening rhetoric that's going on, and that scared the markets. If you look at the Standard & Poor's 500, you will see that there was an immediate, on that announcement, the bears came roaring in and impounded that information fairly quickly. And then there was a rally. Essentially, there was some bargain hunters. Again, I'm talking the terminology I expect you to be able to use. Bargain hunters came in and picked up. And then there was a pretty strong rally in the afternoon. And then essentially it just kind of went down and up. It was one of those days that there was a lot of whipsaw in the market, a lot of volatility. And that's something that we've seen before. And remember that volatility is one of the things that we care about, and not just all plain old volatility. There are two different kinds of that volatility. And anyway, as you can see, though, as the equities markets shed price, in other words, there was sell-off in the equities, and that money has to go somewhere. So where would it go? Well, we look over here and we see that, well, the flight to quality in stage one would send it to the bond markets, which would cause the bond prices to rally. That did not happen. The bond markets were down too. So now we're at a stage two flight to quality, where if the money is coming out of equities and coming out of bonds, then we would expect it to go into metals. And sure enough, there it is. So that's stage two, flight to quality. The equities are presenting too much risk, so investors sell off. They use the money to buy bonds. Well, not this time. They decided bonds were still a little bit too risky for them, so they jumped into gold and silver and other metals to get as much safety as they can in the down market. Again, know this kind of terminology. I just mentioned a little bit ago, well, you can go long stocks, that would be a bullish move, or you can short stocks, that would be a bearish move. In other words, betting on a downturn in the market. If you're going short a specific security, You borrow that stock, and then you sell it at a price, and then you cover at a lower price. Simply buying the stock and giving it back at the lower price. And that, your profit is the difference between the what you borrowed and sold it at, and then what you bought it back at and gave it back to where it had borrowed. That is, now excluding, there would be commissions, of course, and then you would pay some interest on that borrowed stock. Excluding those, if you had, say, you had borrowed a stock and sold it at 30, and the stock price dropped to 28, and you covered at 28, then not counting commissions and interest, you would pocket $2 a share on the swing or on the play. And notice that I use kind of, sounds like informal terms, but we use those kinds of terms, on the swing, on the play, those kinds of things. And I've used those over and over again in the class, kind of sneaking them in on you to get you comfortable with that kind of terminology. Okay, that's that. So you're going to be expected to know how to talk about these kinds of terms. However, there's more to it than that. I want to make sure that you know more of the contours of what's going on in your world right now in terms of markets, equity markets and debt markets. Notice that today the Standard & Poor's 500 had a volume of 1.9 million shares, billion shares, I should say. On average over the past 52 weeks, that number per day would have been over 6 billion shares. So in other words, just like we keep seeing over and over again, this thin trading volume day over day, the markets, for all of the volatility, the downs and ups, there is a huge amount of activity that is not happening that used to happen. That is an indication, again, that there is a very strong wait and see attitude. The volume you see there is portfolio adjustments, control, amateurs by the millions thinking they're geniuses because they invest in Robinhood and make some money, that kind of stuff. Just not, though, the heavies, the big 800-pound gorillas are sitting there waiting. And they're waiting for what? Can't say. But sooner or later, that wait will be over, and it will probably be a very dark day when it is over. Not just for the stock markets, but for eventually the markets for jobs and all that as well. Okay, now moving on from that, flight to quality is a word. You need to know things like equity and all of that kind of what's debt, what's equity, residual claim. Words and terms like that are hugely important for us. In whatever kind of business activity you are in, you need to know what we talk about in finance, because this is what drives your jobs, is what happens in the world of finance and in the economy in general. You will need to, let me get broader here again. It's 75 questions. Now I divide the questions into levels 1, 2, and 3. Level 1 are very easy. Just memory, or you've got it on a note card kind of thing. Level 2 are intermediate. You have to think about them. Maybe do some calculations. Level 3 are the butt kickers. On this exam, there are probably about 8 level 3s. Now, if you are smart, you don't go from beginning to end of the exam, because if you get bogged down, you're going to be panicking at the 115-minute mark and just randomly answering a whole bunch of questions that if you'd thought for 20 seconds, you could have answered accurately. So go through the exam, pick off the level 1 and level 2 questions, mark the level 3s to go back, and then you will have a much better time. This follows a principle that I brought up in the class a long time back, called the Minimax principle. In strategic planning, you always minimize the maximum loss. That's how you choose your strategy. By minimizing the maximum loss here, that means that you are getting all of the easy questions done first. And then the you've minimized the worst that could happen to you on the exam, which is to be left with a few minutes remaining. Okay, now, again, 75 questions. You are allowed two note cards, front and back, and your formula sheet. Now, don't write on the formula sheet. You've got two cards that you can write on. Obviously, you want to spend some area putting some formulas in, you know, ratios and stuff. Those are on your formula sheet, but you might want to do something if there's something you want more detail on. But you'll also want to put in concepts, terms on there. Use those podcasts. I don't do that for my health. I pay for that on my own dime, and I control it. It takes me a couple of hours every week to set those up and get them published to Apple iTunes standards, so use them. I wonder where you are, but if I know that you're at my podcast site, you can't be doing anything that would get you into trouble. Something else I was going to say in that regard, too. Oh, yeah, I have my office hours this week, and I'll have my office hours, regular office hours, next week as well. So there's that for you to look forward to if you've got questions after we have reviewed. Remember that I'm going to spend a lot of time here, and I'm going to expect you on Thursday to ask me questions. The balance of questions, okay. I've copied and pasted about 25 questions from exam one and the quizzes. By the way, there was an incorrect answer on the answer key for that last quiz that we did, and I will fix that either later this week or this weekend. Question five, the answer key was technically right. Somehow it shuffled, the exam printed with two of the answers shuffled. They didn't even make sense the order that they were in. But anyway, so it's definitely the case that there was one that was wrong on the answer sheet. So most of you got it right, and so you'll get a better score once I fix those. So don't panic on that. Okay. Other details I want to bring come through. Okay. Just a broad outline of the math questions. You've got to find a payment on a loan. You're going to find a bond quote and a bond yield to maturity. You're going to find an NPV and a net present value and an internal rate of return. Now, if you know how to use your calculator, those are not hard at all. In fact, there's one: how much interest did you pay over the life of a loan you took out? Again, if you know the app on your TI-83, that's just keying in the numbers. So make sure that you are good with that app. You know what's going on with each of the apps that I've shown you this semester. What else do I want to know? Okay, there will be, I'm trying to think. Yes, there's a matching section. You should not blow that. I mean, that's easy. You should obviously understand the details of the Federal Reserve System and its operations, and the lecture on ethics. You need to understand agency, but you also need to know the names of the different ways that you can pursue an ethical action. There was the categorical imperative,
And then there was the situational ethics, which breaks down into two different types. Make sure you know those. They are important. I'm not just blowing smoke. At some point, probably not for a while in your lives, you're going to find out that you naturally tend toward one of those ethical models. It's just the way people are. What else do I want to... Here's another thing, too. As far as definitions are concerned, watch yourself, because I may give you a definition that is slightly wrong. It's got a word, an important word, that's not the correct one, or a couple of words that aren't the correct words. Catch me. Don't let me catch you. You catch me. And get them done. Those are kind of difficult. Are those level one or level two? I count them as level one, because if you make a mistake on those, it's just because you're moving too fast or you're not paying attention. But just watch it. There are two or three that are like that on the exam. But anyway, 25, copy and paste. I might change the order of the answers, or I might change a number, but you've seen it before. Make sure you understand the difference between debt and equity very clearly. You understand priority of claims. And we'll talk about, and there's going to be, oh, let me make sure you understand. I will give you some questions on free cash flow, especially make sure you know what I mean by NOPAT and what its significance is in finance. Yes?
When you say exam one, you mean the midterm?
The midterm, I'm sorry, yeah. Yeah, the first exam in this class, yes, the midterm. I do apologize, I'm not thinking too clearly here. Hang on here. See if I've got a marker in here somewhere. I thought I did. Yeah, I got one. Okay. Remember that NOPAT is EBIT minus your taxes. This is fundamentally different from accounting, where they subtract out the interest expense. And we don't, because we include that cost in the discount rate. The discount rate is includes the weighted average cost of capital, and therefore it includes the after-tax cost of debt. So this is our starting ground. And then from there, NOPAT, we aim at the free cash flow. We go from NOPAT, we add back the depreciation, we subtract out change in net working capital, net operating working capital, I should say, and then we subtract out the capital expenditures. And we get to free cash flow. Make sure you know this. It's not so much that you would be calculating a lot of free cash flows, but you need to know the things along the way. On the exam, I will give you, and I'll do an example on Thursday. I'll give you a real company, and it's 2 years of current assets and current liabilities, and you will have to find the change in net operating working capital. So it's a real company. I used its financial information from its balance sheets for the past 2 years, and this will give me the chance to test you on whether you can calculate a change in net working capital, net operating working capital, I should say. So that will be there. If you know how to do it,
that problem is just a breeze. It's just current assets minus current liabilities, which is this year's net working capital, minus current assets minus current liabilities for the previous year. In other words, this year's net working capital minus last year's net working capital. If you can do that arithmetic, then you've got an answer on one of the questions. Yes, there are some true and false. I can't tell you how many. I'll try to remember to count them and see how many there are. Be careful on true and false, though. Again, a word can change something from true to false. So watch my wording. Essentially, I am trying to trip you. Because out there in the real world, you'll have a lot of people who think they know things, but their information is partial. And they've got things wrong. And I want you to be able to be sharp enough to catch them when they are saying something that is wrong because they've missed some small detail in it, in the construction of their logic. Okay, that's that. Yeah. I'll have you calculate stock price from the dividend growth model. I'm not going to have you do one where there's a horizon value, not in this class. I will do one where there's a horizon value in, if you take my 341, but in this one, it, in other words, not one of those where there's a point, a place in the future where the dividend stabilizes. And then you go through that, find the present value of that perpetuity, cost of growth perpetuity, plus the present value of the unstable dividends and all that. I won't have you do one that complicated. But I will have you do one where you calculate from a company that has a stable dividend growth rate and all of that at the price of the stock. I will also have you find me a capital gain on a stock that you have purchased at some point in the past and you are selling at some point in the future. I'll have you calculate a capital gain. And yes, I will give you the number of days between the two dates. So I don't hear you fussing about trying to count all those days and years. There are some broad themes in this class. You remember some of the happy times that we've had from the beginning, when you realized that this was definitely a really serious course. Do you remember, were you here the first day of class, madam? And the second day? You do remember that demonstration with the bull and the bull market will live forever and how that went kind of sideways? Well, I'll remind you of that on Thursday. Closure. But there are other things that I talked about along the way. And some things I demonstrated as best I could, like concepts of risk and the difference between frequency and severity, of course, I talked about that. But there was one that I wanted to give you a demonstration about, and it's got to be done now or I'll never do it in this class. I want to give you a real-world example of optimal capital structure and capital budgeting, how they work together. So let's take a company. Let's take a company, a farmer. Let's do a farmer. Now this farmer has a debt equity, optimal capital structure of debt and equity is 25% debt and 75% equity. So in order to get this working, okay, sir, you are going to be a financier who specializes in providing equity capital to farmers. Madam,
you are going to be a financier of farm operations that specializes in debt. Now, each of you has available capital. You, sir, have a dollar, and you, madam, have a dollar. Okay? Now, there's going to be a farmer who's going to need $1 because he needs to buy something critical to his operations. Now, if I could have my two assistants for this, please escort me to the hallway with me. Now he needs a dollar because he's going to buy two for a dollar. I'm blacking out. Are you, sir, going to... Wait. Are you, sir, going to provide that dollar?
75.
Why? Why 75?
Because I'm 75%.
Oh, really? So what are you going to provide the farmer? You need the dollars, how much are you going to provide? He already provided 75 cents, so how much more does this farmer need?
25%.
How much?
25%.
25 what?
Cents.
Cents, yes. So, sir, would you provide the equity financing to this farmer? Where the hell's the farmer?
You're welcome.
Now, she costs 75 cents, so give that horsey her money, and I get, and by doing this, the farmer has acquired his capital for the investment, and at the same time has maintained his optimal capital structure, which was 25% debt and 75% equity, and it will still be that after the capital investment is completed. This leaves only one final question for you to answer. Sir, why did she get 75 cents and I got only 25 cents? Do you know why? Let me explain. I am a quarter horse. That's all I have for you today. I have a quiz for you, and then you're done.